Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, along with Shad Markowitz. We are your hosts again for this weekend show and also recorded a number of interviews and a lot of company updates again throughout this week. It was a little bit more interesting of a trading week because we did have the Fed and a little bit more volatility and a little bit more positive moves when it comes to a broad range of sectors, more in the middle of the week. But again, I think we all know that we are still very much in the middle of this summer trading session, let's call it. I also want to wish everybody in Canada a happy long weekend. August long weekend, always one of my favorite long weekends because usually just nicer weather. That being said, we're kicking off the show with Adrian Day, president of Adrian Day Asset Management, also manages the Euro-Pacific Gold Fund. Now, Adrian, we're going to start off here focused in the royalty space for metals. Because, look, we had a lot of interviews this week with a wide range of a lot of the small and mid-tier size royalty companies. And look, there's no denying that there's been an explosion in terms of the royalty space and royalty companies. And I think it gets a little confusing for some investors understanding what makes a good royalty company simply because there are royalty companies out there that don't have cash flowing royalties. And they, I guess, are branding themselves as royalty companies, but that's a bit of a stretch sometimes just because they have non-producing royalties in their portfolio. Adrian, I know you invest in select a few royalty companies. What do you focus most on when you're analyzing the different royalty companies in the space?
Yeah, well, good day, Corey, Shad. Thank you for having me. That's a good question, and you've set the groundwork well. And we'll talk about the explosion of new companies and what that means for the sector maybe in a second, if we may. But what do I look for? Well, first of all, above everything else, I look for management. I always look for management in smaller companies, but it's true pretty much on any of the royalties. You know, management to me is absolutely key. And what does management mean? It means a lot of things. It means in the royalty space, I think in addition to everything else that you'd expect, it means a discipline. Discipline to pass on deals that are not good deals. And I think that is perhaps one of the most difficult things for royalty companies. And the reason I say that is because clearly, I mean, you see it in the market, but it's logical. When a royalty company has the more diversified the stream of income or near-term income, the more diversified, the better the multiples, right? So newer companies want to grow rapidly because, you know, when you've just got one royalty on your books, you have a much lower multiple than if you can get 3, 4, 5 on your books. And so the smaller companies, there's a temptation, and frankly, for new companies, it's a balancing act, but there's a balance between growing quickly and maintaining that discipline and only doing good deals, which with the proliferation of royalty companies, doing good deals is more and more difficult, frankly. You want good management that has discipline. You also want, you know, some diversity in the income stream or the near-term income stream. Those are the two key things, I think, in royalty companies that I look at.
Well, Adrian, you bring up a couple good points there because I do think with the proliferation of companies, we're seeing sometimes bidding wars where certain royalties get bid up and up and up, and now the company is now possibly overpaying for that royalty just to say, hey, we've got a producing asset, or hey, we've got this key development asset. But there's also some companies that have a really strong ratio of how many producing royalties they have to their overall number. And there's other companies that have a huge book of royalties, but a very small percentage of them are actually cash flowing. And a lot of their value that they bring to the market is the development pipeline and what they see as the future development, but that doesn't really pay investors now. And then some people are more aggressive with the dividend, some are not more aggressive with the dividend. Is there any other areas that you look at? Like, do you like to see precious metal focus only? Do you like it when they have a mix of assets where they may have some other commodities in there? Are you animated at all by some of the new base metal ones that we're seeing develop, and or even the uranium ones are developing? There's a lot of different royalty companies that are coming to market.
Yeah.
Are there any of those that animate you?
I think for me, the key is that the company says what it is. So I can go along with a royalty company which only has which doesn't have any producing assets or even no near-term producing assets, but has a good portfolio of large-scale, you know, earlier stage developmental. Let's say, I mean, you don't want only exploration, obviously. So I can go along with any of those things. I can go along with a primarily gold royalty company, precious metals royalty company, but also has some other resources. Or I can go along with a pure royalty company, pure precious metals. Again, I think the key is, and I wouldn't necessarily say I prefer one over the other, the key is to know what you're buying and not get sort of knocked over by companies that sort of go off the rails with what they said they were going to do. I mean, let's face it, Franco-Nevada has well over 10% of its revenue now from oil and gas, well over 10%. And so, you know, when they started that, I remember that when they started that, oh gosh, 20 years ago now, they got a lot of criticism for getting into oil and gas. But it served them well. And it's been a good balance. I mean, it's only a small percentage, but, well, relatively small percentage. But it's been a good balance to gold, where sometimes that's produced revenue when the precious metals haven't. And again, you know what you're getting when you buy Franco. So in answer to your question, for me personally, the key is really to know what you're getting. I think you also want companies to stick with their expertise. I mean, I don't really want a small company where clearly gold and silver are their expertise. That's what they know. You don't really want them trying to compete in the uranium space, for example, because it's they're probably not going to get the best deals at the best prices. You know, one of the problems with the bidding wars and everything else, I think it's true to say that you're not going to get really good deals at the moment by buying existing royalties, with few exceptions. Some companies, like Metalla, is a good example. You mentioned Metalla. Oh, that was before we went live. I'm sorry. But you mentioned Metalla as an example. Or, you know, Metalla's been good at getting existing royalties and doing it through avenues and contacts and so on. Once an existing royalty gets into a bidding war, an auction, let's say, once it gets into an auction and other companies are invited in, it is very, very difficult to get a good deal, because there is always two things. There's always some company for which a particular royalty perhaps makes more sense than someone else. They've got a royalty next door or whatever. And so they're prepared to pay more. But more importantly, there's always some company that just needs to do a deal because shareholders are shouting at them, you haven't done a deal all year. What's going on? And they just feel pressure to do a deal. And there's always someone willing to overpay. That's the problem. So the two things to look at, I think, and I didn't mention this earlier, but it comes with management and their experience. It comes with the experience. Does management have good contacts in the industry? You know, do they have lots of people that they can go to talk about royalties and try to get, I'll call it an inside deal. That's not, I don't mean that in a, you know, legal sense. An inside track, let's say, where maybe they have an advantage on buying a package of existing royalties and can make it and can buy them without them going to auction. And that happens sometimes. It happens less and less these days because I think everyone, the companies that have royalties inside, and also just individuals that own royalties on projects. I think increasingly pretty much everyone these days knows there's a lot of companies out there. But still, you know, you can approach a rancher or a landowner and talk to them and, you know, get on the right wavelength with them and spend time with them. It takes time. You know, you've got to be patient. And maybe 6 months or a year later, you consummate a deal because the guy's happy with what you're offering and you're happy with the price you're paying. And he never even suggests going to auction. But that's getting increasingly unusual. And of course, the other way is to create royalties. But for the smaller companies, creating royalties is much more difficult. You know, that's obviously something that Franco and the bigger companies do more and more. You know, most of Franco's, certainly in dollar terms, most of Franco's royalties and streams over the last multiple years have been ones they've created rather than, you know, existing royalties they've bought. But, you know, as I say, a lot easier for the bigger companies. The other thing I would say, if I may, I don't know if you were being negative on, you know, companies who call themselves royalty companies but don't have any revenue stream. You know, I mean, they're also what I'll call hybrid companies, and that might be, you know, an Altius, which is in the base metal, which is one of the bigger ones. Or it might be, let's say, an Origin, which you know, has morphed from a prospect generator the aim is to generate prospects with the goal of collecting royalties. So I don't see anything wrong in that personally. I mean, again, you just have to analyze each company on its own merits. But it's not the same as buying an Osisko or Sandstorm, obviously.
Oh, exactly, Adrian. And I was just saying that you're right, a little bit tongue-in-cheek and also a little bit negative in terms of some of the new entrants into the space that, quite frankly, to me, aren't royalty companies. But the ones that you have mentioned and some of the hybrid ones that have grown to be royalty companies, those are more real companies. It's just some of these new entrants that have me a bit worried.
But I agree with you completely. But it's you know, we get this all the time, don't we, Corey? When marijuana's hot, you know, well, let's not say marijuana. When nickel's hot, you know, in the 1970s, everybody becomes a nickel company, even though they know nothing about nickel. And when uranium's hot, everybody suddenly switches from gold to uranium because gold's down and uranium's a hot. Shouldn't use hot with the word hot when you're talking about uranium, but, you know, uranium is a hot resource. And people move around and they don't know anything about it, and now royalties are the hot space and everyone's becoming a royalty company. I couldn't agree with you more on that. I couldn't agree with you more. But, you know, the truth is there's some really good quality companies out there. Really, I mean, really good quality, with good quality management among both the seniors and some of the juniors. I mean, some of the juniors are very, very small, but they have good quality management. Some managements, like I think Star Royalty would be a good example. I think they're going to grow a little slower than maybe some others because they are more disciplined than, and I don't want to name names, but they're more disciplined than some of the other smaller companies that want to grow more rapidly. Time will tell whether, you know, growing more rapidly actually achieves more success. But there's no question that the patient approach is a much more low risk approach. You know, we've seen many companies over the years, and I think we can say it now because it's in their history, but I mean, Sandstorm will be an example as well, where in their early days, I mean, they just tried to grow too rapidly and they did some pretty lousy deals that bit them. As I say, that's in their history, so I don't want anyone to take anything negative about Sandstorm away from that comment. But trying to grow too rapidly can backfire.
Well, Adrian, you brought up a couple interesting points there. I want to circle back to one or two of them. One of them was you talked about how sometimes people get into that flavor of the day. But we have seen some good ideas, at least on the business model, working in royalty space in base metals. It originally worked in oil and gas. So circling back to the Franco comment, like that's probably where they got the idea. And Wheaton and
it is. It is indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now when we see new entrants in the royalty space, or we see the, you know, battery metal space getting hot and it's trending, we see companies focused on just base metals, and they've had their own day in the sun. So we are seeing some of these different sectors pop up. And if the royalty model is a good business model, I don't hold that against them for wanting to apply that same model in a different commodity. I just think it's harder to get the deals in smaller niche sectors. But one thing you brought up was the difference between how certain companies make acquisitions. And I maybe want to spend just a second longer there. So there are certain companies that like a Maverick, for example, that's buying baskets of royalties from senior producers. That's one strategy. There's other companies, like you mentioned, Metalla, that tend to do one deal at a time, but they try to make them accretive deals. And it may take, like you said, working on putting together a lot of different partners to find a deal that works for everybody. And there's certain companies that have proprietary databases where they're going out and trying to pick off ones no one else is bidding on. But you also brought up that other important category, and that is certain companies create their own streams or their own royalties depending on the setup. And those are becoming more rare, but there are a few newer companies that are going to try to use that same model and create their own streams with the companies. And I would argue the prospect generators used to do that. They used to go out and have 10 different properties going, and they would try to bring in the JV partner, and their holdout would be, hey, what I'd really like is a 2 or 3% net smelter royalty on this project if you take it all the way through. And so I'm curious to get your take. Do you think we'll see some of these royalty companies start trying to pick off the assets that the prospect generators have, or do you think we'll see a new wave of prospect generators that do what EMX royalties did, where they started as a prospect generator, did a lot of creative deals, got a basket of royalties out of it, and really became a royalty powerhouse over time? It took them about 2 decades. Do you think we'll see more of that between the prospect generators and the royalty companies?
Wow, huge, lots of topics, lots of things you mentioned, even though there was only one question at the end, but there were lots of interesting things there. Yeah, just if I may, to touch base on a couple of things you mentioned, but don't let me forget the question. On the base metals, I agree with you completely. You know, part of the problem with the non-precious metals is that there do tend to be a lot fewer. There tend to be fewer royalties available, and you know, particularly when you're talking base metals and you're talking not only producing but you're talking developmental projects, you are talking huge projects. So I mentioned Star, for example. I mean, Star can't go to BHP and say, you know, we'd like to do a stream on, Escondida or something. I mean, it just wouldn't work. There's only Franco and Wheaton and maybe and Royal, but are really the size that can really deal with that sort of thing. So they're trying to pick up. So it's a lot more difficult, is what I'm saying, from the base metal ones. But, you know, some of the companies like Nova, I know you talked to Nova, you know, which is affiliated in some way, not formally affiliated, but affiliated with Metalla. You know, they're doing a very good job at building a portfolio. But it's a lot more difficult, in my view. Proprietary databases is interesting because there are certainly royalties inside non-precious metal companies. So, you know, inside whatever, an Australian telephone company or something, and having the proprietary database or the knowledge of that is very helpful because those companies are less likely to understand. Those companies are less likely to immediately grasp the idea that, well, wait a minute, I should go to an auction on this. Whereas, you know, the gold companies are much more likely to understand that. But if you're not talking, if you're talking about, so I think that's absolutely true, but there are some companies, Vox, for example, that has more more knowledge of those kind of royalties in Australia, where they have more insight and knowledge. But when it comes to royalties in royalty companies, I don't think there's really anything such as propriety. I mean, everybody knows what's out there, I think. Although sometimes the companies themselves forget about them. And I'm sorry, what was the question?
On the prospect generators, do you think, and those are all great points, Adrian, but on the prospect generators, it used to be they created royalties, and then I wonder if now we'll see a feeding frenzy where the royalty companies will go after the prospect generators.
Yeah. I think that's the next stage we're going to get in the development of royalty companies. We're going to see more acquisitions, and that might be buying individual assets from prospect generators, but it might be buying an entire junior royalty company. Remember, a lot of the smaller companies, a lot of the prospect generators and the prospect generators that are morphing into royalty companies, they don't really want to sell one of their royalties. I mean, because they're trying to build a portfolio of royalties. So unless the price was extraordinary, I won't name names, but they don't want to sell those royalties. Why would they? Because they're trying to build a portfolio of royalties. But I think you're going to see more acquisitions in the space. That's absolutely true. Absolutely true.
All right, Adrian, we're out of time for these segments. I really appreciate you spending two segments with us and a dive into those royalty companies. Again, everybody, if you want to hear either the replay of the webinar with Elemental Royalties that I did, that will be posted early next week, and any of the interviews that we had with royalty companies over this last week, be sure to visit our website, kereport.com, and click on all those interviews. Adrian, always great chatting with you, buddy. Thank you for taking time this weekend. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.